What was it? What'd you see?
I think I got it on camera.
Oh, what?
I think I got it.
Shut up.
Fine. Please. Fine. What was it? What was it?
It was fucking Bigfoot, dude.
All right. Little layoff. We're back.
I asked you never to leave me in the lurch again, sir. And you have done so.
For those of you who listen to this podcast on the reg, as the kids like to say, I'll never say that again. I don't even think kids say that.
We're off to a bad start. We got to let's just bring it together, pull it together. We're starting a show. We've been off for a couple weeks. There's been stuff going on. I understand that, but we're professionals. So let's try and do this.
If you listen to this podcast regularly, you know that I went on a little trip. We took 2 weeks off, but you'll also know that we made a joke during the Mothman episode about O'Hare Airport. And we were saying, you know, sorry for terrifying you with these stories of how creepy O'Hare seems to be with Mothman appearances and UFO appearances. I'm not even paying attention to my itinerary because I've done it so many times. And usually they fly me direct, almost always. But this one particular place I was going, I had to connect because there was no direct flight into this small little airport. And guess where I land?
Yeah, you sent me a great picture from O'Hare. That was fantastic.
And I'm like kind of putting two and two together. I'm like, oh, God. That's not ORD for Orlando. I'm going to O'Hare Airport. And I got to admit, this is how superstitious or, you know, whatever I am. I was going to send out an Instagram pic with the O'Hare sign behind me on our Rated P for Paranormal Instagram page and be like, look where Maddie ended up two weeks after talking about it. And I refused to do that because I'm like, nope, because
you don't want to tempt it.
Right. I'm taking off on a plane two more times from here on my way home. So I'm not posting that until I'm well clear.
I don't blame you. I feel the same way. I feel the same way. Did you see anything?
That's another thing. I shut the window. Usually I like to see where I'm at, but I'm like taking off and in coming in and out of O'Hare. I just kept waiting to see the winged creature flying next to the plane. I didn't want to see it.
Of course.
So I shut my window. Like Bill Shatner in The Twilight Zone, and just left it shut.
Or John Lithgow in the movie remake of The Twilight Zone.
There you go.
I just wanted to say, it's an under-discussed short film in that film, and it's good.
Yeah, man. God, that movie we should do too, because there's all kinds of high strangeness around the making of that film, the remake, The Twilight Zone movie.
Yeah,
death
involved. There's a lot of weird stuff about that. Yeah. Well, there's some stuff there I don't really want to talk about, actually.
Yeah.
So
right, exactly.
Maybe we'll bypass it.
Yeah, all right. Maybe we'll
that
skip
one
it.
Hurts. That
Speaking
one hurts.
Of skipping movies.
Oh, God. All right. Listen, I'm upset. I want to get this off my chest. I want to, I feel like I've, you know, in therapy, I've been learning how to process stuff with people and just not, you know, not immediately go to the rage place. So I'm just going to talk this through with you. You picked this film. And then you left. Mm-hmm. I saw the film, not knowing that you were going to leave. I didn't know that. I was doing my job and you told me, wow, I got to go. It's been a while. We're supposed to do a show. I haven't even seen it. We're going to do it later. 2 weeks go by. Now I've forgotten the movie. I don't remember it. Now that should be telling. Maybe that's giving away something, but I had to see this. I had to see this movie twice, and this is going to be a hard win to get back into my good graces. I'm telling you right now,
Tony. When you're in an abusive podcast relationship, you have to look at your role in the relationship. It's not just evil Maddie. You've come here willingly.
The only thing I've done wrong is taking this too seriously because I have seen this film twice, which I think is maybe more times than the director saw it or the editor.
We're not burying the lead, Tony.
I can't do Ken. I've seen it twice.
I don't even want to do this, man. I know. I don't even want to do like the preamble paranormal part. I just want to dive into the film.
Okay. I got that out of my system. Okay. I got the anger's gone. It's dissipated. I've talked to you. We're good. I'm not upset anymore. Let's talk about stuff because we can only talk about this movie for so long. So what's going on? Anything on the radar? Anything interesting happening to you in the last couple of weeks? Of course, man.
There he goes.
Of course.
There he goes. The cat. yes, I traveled for work. Oh, and I would like to, not to bring things down, because I'm not going to bring things down. One of the things that was going on, one of the reasons I had to take some time off is I had a death in the family. It was my father-in-law, who I just want to eulogize just for like 25 seconds, if I could. Because this is a show about spooky paranormal stuff, but it's also a lot about faith and belief. And this man was a man of incredible faith. He was like a second father to me. He had... He had 14 siblings, Anthony.
Wow.
Irish Catholic family, Dorchester, Mass, in a small apartment, 14 of them. He ended up with 18 grandkids, 10 great-grandkids, and all he did in his life was give. He didn't golf like me. He didn't hunt. He didn't fish. But he just went to Mass. And visited with family and served others and helped people who needed things. Like, that's literally all he did. So I just wanted to say that on whatever public airwaves podcasts are. I wanted to put it out there into the universe that he was a great man. And so that's part of why I had to take some time off to say goodbye to my father-in-law.
Wow. Well, yeah, man. My condolences and our condolences to you and your family, and that's really tough no matter what the age or the circumstances, or it's always hard, but thanks for sharing that. I'm sorry I never get a chance to meet him.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, man, I know you've suffered some great losses yourself through this COVID time, and so we have all been there. We will all be there. It's the great equalizer, as they say. It's coming for all of us. And
yeah, it is. This has certainly been a lesson in that.
Yeah,
this year.
So I'd like to dedicate this to Jerry. From the moment I asked him, I did the cliche thing, Tony, where I, you know, went to his house and I asked if I could ask for his daughter's hand in marriage, you know. And from like that moment on, he was nothing ever. But he never even joked like, oh, my son-in-law. There was none of that in him. He just always made me feel better about myself every time I left the room. As they say, a mensch.
A genuine guy.
Yes.
A genuine person. Mm-hmm. They don't have a lot of those genuine people around anymore, it doesn't seem like.
I can't think of a better episode in a way to dedicate, because he also loved to laugh, and I think this one's going to be a barrel of laughs.
That's good, because we'd have very little else to do here. I was initially going to say, are you sure you want to dedicate this episode? This episode, sir? This one?
Yes. 100%. All right. Well, we do have some breaking paranormal news that we need to get to. A couple messages from fans. So why don't we get through that business and then we'll get to our film Exists.
Great.
Our breaking paranormal news, Tony, is two things, both UFO related, not Bigfoot related. Although there are many who truly believe that the Bigfoot phenomena is related to the UFO phenomena.
Yeah.
So two UFO items in the news. One came from Twitter, and he keeps coming up. He keeps popping up, and he will continue to, because he's, you know, really closely tied to this topic. But Tom DeLonge, former Blink-182 member and now head of To the Stars Academy, tweeted a really cryptic tweet, which we will link a picture to on our Instagram page, so you can see it. He tweeted this, Tony, on 2 days ago as we record this, which would have made it the final day of February. He tweeted a picture of what could best be described as some sort of alien looking gray looking creature, but it's so pixelated and difficult to see. But the general sense of it is that it's some sort of alien creature. And he just put the caption, real picture, period. That's all he wrote, real picture, and tweeted that out. Now, this is very interesting coming from him because he has long been promising that To the Stars Academy is going to start dropping stuff that they have. He's been teasing this for a long time. The power players that make up To the Stars Academy have material. He hasn't said what. He has alluded to some of it being craft pieces or some sort of alien technology, but and he's put weird cryptic pictures of metal-looking things that could be from a craft with no explanation. And so he puts this picture out with no explanation other than to say real picture. I retweeted it and it's like, it's on. You know, I immediately got on it. And then he tweeted this one day ago, the day after he posts that cryptic picture. What a great day, setting first five songs off to be mixed, the final stage and song's evolution from the birth of the idea to 100 tracks, diligently crafted, blah, blah, blah. He's making a new album, apparently. So I was like, oh, Tom DeLonge, how can you tweet that picture out with that caption and then the next day talk about your new record? Like, come on.
It's disappointing, kind of, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to, can I ask a couple of dumb questions?
Please.
Because there are, I think a lot of people that might tune into the show know about paranormal stuff, would know Tom DeLonge, would know To the Stars Academy. But there are people that probably, one or two of my friends who like movies, for instance, just two people. I don't know that many people, but who might listen and don't know anything about the paranormal part, don't know why Tom DeLonge, lead singer of Blink-182, would be connected to this subject at all, or whether To the Stars Academy is like, you know, is it a theme park for little children or is this a real thing? They don't know the difference. So can you just like briefly say why this is a notable announcement?
Yes. His story is so uniquely weird and seemingly unbelievable until you look at it through the lens of where we stand now, which is years later, and a lot of the things he claimed have borne to be true. So basically, I'll try to make it 30 seconds, which could be a three-hour story. He was obsessed with UFOs and the paranormal, and he just somehow, through his own dogged research and determination, ended up in situations.
And his resources, because he had money, obviously. Correct. Through the rock and roll band. Yeah.
Correct.
The fame. Rock and roll band.
He had fame and money, and he leveraged that to sit with some power players in that world. And he claims he was actually brought into hotel rooms and debriefed for hours and felt threatened.
Debriefed has two meanings, man. Which taken into a hotel room and debriefed means a lot of, can mean different things.
God, thank God for you. I say these unintentionally ridiculous things.
I want to be clear.
Yeah, no, you're right. He was
definition.
He was, you know, given intelligence. And okay. It's not the first time, if you think it sounds crazy, that a singer would be in with these people. You know, it's not the first time that whoever they are that know these secrets have attempted to use entertainers to spread their message. We know that.
Well, no, I mean, Jackie Gleason famously apparently was taken by Nixon to the bunker and shown a UFO, which is...
And there are people who
believe... A story.
Yes, absolutely. And there are people who believe that secrets are given to people like Steven Spielberg. We know for a fact, actually, there's documentation that some of the earliest UFO films were informed by government officials who said, basically to them, show it like this, because this is how it might happen, but, you know, which is eerie. So long way to say, Tom DeLonge got in with some whistleblowers, some people who were behind the scenes at the highest levels of our government investigating UFO things, and a lot of them wanted to work with Tom, I shouldn't say a lot of them. Some of them wanted to actually work with Tom DeLonge and use his fame and his platform to get out their whistleblowing message, which was, we know this is real. We've been dealing with it for a long time, and we should tell the people. So the people that Tom DeLonge was with,
okay,
some of them left their positions, like Luis Elizondo. I can't remember his name. Luis or Elizondo. I forget how to say his last name. Forgive me.
I hope you cut that part right out of the show.
I will. I'll find out how to say it and insert it. It'll sound all bad. Like
Louis Alejandro.
He was the head, basically, of the covert program tracking these things. So DeLong forms To the Stars Academy, which he describes as a think tank entertainment company. They want to do films about these subjects. They want
a little red flag there, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, maybe, but he wants to do it, present this information in an educational and entertaining way. He wants it to have multiple components. Okay. But the number one object of To the Stars, clearly, is to spread this information to the general public. Because like you, Tony, they believe if it's true, then the public deserves to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, according to Tom DeLong, they have material already. I know Tom DeLong was very fascinated with Bob Lazar's case and that element that Bob Lazar talked about existing from UFOs. So he has alluded to the fact that To the Stars Academy has their hands on some material, some UFO material. I would imagine pictures, you know, proof. And he's been kind of teasing us with they were going to release this stuff over the next. And Tom DeLong predicted things like the Tic Tac UFO disclosure. He predicted all of that. Like you watched.
I was going to ask you if there was any connection between the people he worked with and the people that were running the agencies that the military admitted to finally running once that Tic Tac video was released. Are those agencies that are working with DeLong, or are those different agencies?
Yes. If you look at the board members of To the Stars Academy on his website, it's a kind of a who's who, or more accurately, it's a former list of who's who, because most of them no longer work for those agencies, although some do.
Or they've been killed.
Right. But yes, to answer your question in the short form, yes, like the people he is with worked at the highest levels of intelligence and military and even government. You know, we know Harry Reid funded that helped fund that UFO research. So it's compelling coming from him because he faces a lot of criticism by doubters because he's Tom DeLong from Blink 182. Okay, so the singer from Blink 182 is going to tell us about UFOs, right?
Yeah, it looks kind of silly on paper.
It does.
I guess at first.
But he's been right time and time again. And
well, why not him? I mean, I've, you know, through what I've read, it's pretty clear that, you know, a lot of this information is in the private sector, that rich, very rich, you know, people who are curious and have the time and money to spend searching for this kind of thing.
What was the book you read that kind of details that, Tony?
There's this book, American Cosmic, which details some of that stuff. Really good book. I'm surprised that you haven't gotten a chance to read it yet. It's pretty great because it details encounters with these kinds of guys, with these kinds of people. This writer, D.W. Pasulka, got involved in UFO research through a completely different avenue than most people. She was looking at medieval art and stuff like that. Huh. And there were certain things that she was coming across in certain paintings that sparked conversations with other researchers. And one of them that she met said, "You might want to go to one of these crazy UFO meetings." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" You know, and she ended up going, and kind of this wormhole opened up, and she just kind of went in and started meeting some of the people that you've probably mentioned. And I wouldn't be surprised if she actually did one of these people. I mean, it could be Tom DeLong as well.
Probably.
They're not named their real names in the book. They're keeping their identities pretty quiet, but it's a really well-written book and very, you know, considerate, very smart.
I've heard Tom DeLong in long form interviews, like long form podcast interviews, tell his story. I think it was Rogan's. You know, he goes, "It sounds like fiction. I know, but I was with two," you know, like I'm paraphrasing him. I don't remember the exact details, but the basics were like, "I was with a former government high ranking intelligence official, and another guy brought me into a hotel room, questioned me for hours, showed me things that I shouldn't be seeing." You know, like high level, and I'm going to myself, how did I get up this high? You know, and that's kind of the birth to the stars.
It really does make a lot of sense. I mean, why not utilize somebody who's in that position, you know, who's kind of fan friendly and somebody that everybody kind of knows about and was non-threatening coming from him too. But also all this coming around the same time that, you know, I mean, the government, the military did say, oh, we don't know what these Tic Tacs are. We've been researching it. We told you we weren't, and we have been.
Yep.
So that's all on the record. Of course, it would be going hand in hand with different organizations that would want slightly different things out of this. But, you know, maybe the push is on. Maybe they do have some fun stuff other than a rock and roll album to drop on us.
And look, I mean, you need no look any further than me for credibility on Tom DeLonge, because I had no tie to him. I didn't like Blink-182. I wasn't like a Tom DeLonge defender. I just heard him saying all this stuff for years, and I heard him be mocked.
You had all those Tom DeLonge tapes. Stop it.
Hey, Killer Mom, tapes. I'm here.
I've been waiting. Thank you. I know you didn't want to do it, and you said you weren't going to do it on this show, but I was going to somehow make it happen, and thank you.
Nya 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 nya.
Honestly, on your earlier previous podcast when you did that, I thought it was some special effect that you were doing. Just to see you do that in real time.
I was doing it for years. I just thought it was to myself. And then I heard a podcast that I loved called The Unbelievable Podcast. They all did the same thing. I mean, it's the first thing you notice. You listen to Blink when I do it. So I used to do it to my friends to annoy them in the car and stuff. Anyway, look no further than me, because I heard him saying all this stuff like years before Tic Tac and the New York Times. He's like, they got video and they're going to come out and they're going to start admitting that they know about this stuff. And everyone's going, okay, we'll call us when that happens, Tom DeLonge. Well, boom.
See, it makes you want to just play this video back to people and be like, guys, can we get an amen here for just a second? He said we all made fun of him, and now it's just like business as usual. No, come on. You know, I'm not going to start crying over it, but it's like, you know, those who've seen Lights in the Sky, stuff that freaked him out, they didn't know how to explain. You know, there's always been a little bit of that kind of snarkiness around it with people. And I get it. I understand. But, you know, it's you just want a little bit of that vindication. And when it doesn't get registered, when you're like, yeah, hold on, full stop. There's a lot of stuff you said that wasn't there. That's there. Now you're saying it's so I was stupid. Thanks. Right. You just want it recognized, you know.
Here's another thing.
Tom DeLonge.
Here's another thing. He started calling them. He would get very serious in some of these interviews, and he would say, they're unidentified aerial threats, he called them.
Threats.
And he would say, hey, Mom, there's a threat. He would say they are threats, and that our governments have already worked with other governments in thwarting them, basically. And he said, it's all going to come out. And then he kept saying things like that. And he goes, and our government is taking secret behind-the-scenes steps to stop these things in ways that you don't even understand or could comprehend. And then I'm watching Trump up there announcing Space Force like a year and a half, 2 years later. You know, this military wing that's going to defend us in space. And everyone around me is going, from what? What are they defending us from? And I'm just thinking back at Tom DeLonge's words going, what was Trump debriefed on? You know what I mean? That other presidents have been debriefed on and just went like, okay, well, we'll handle it. And he's like, we're going to make a space force. I'm going to shoot him out of the sky.
Great.
Anyway, point is, yeah, DeLonge's a player, like it or not. He's a player in this stuff. Another story that came up, Tony, this week, this was on all the headlines of all the national papers and online articles. The FBI admits, this comes from Washington 5 days ago, the FBI is aware of an American Airlines pilot report of an apparent UFO seen soaring over northeast New Mexico earlier this week. Again, this is a week old, but stopped short of confirming whether an investigation is underway. The pilot was maneuvering a plane bound for Phoenix, Arizona, on his way to Winslow. I was just going to say
a joke that no one is going to care to get anymore.
He was standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona, from Cincinnati, Ohio, on Sunday afternoon, when the flight crew spotted a quick-moving, unusual object flying above them. On Tuesday, American Airlines confirmed to Fox News that the audio transmission was indeed from Flight 2292. A spokesperson for the FBI's Albuquerque office said, yes, indeed, we are aware of this incident. And they neither confirm nor deny, you know, its UFO aspect.
Wait, was this a military plane?
No, American Airlines commercial.
Oh, American Airlines, right.
Yep. He asks an unidentified person, presumably from air traffic control, if they had, quote, any targets up there. We had something go right over the top of us. Let me do my pilot.
Yeah, Tower, you got anything targets up there? We just had something go right over top of us. I hate to say this, but it looked like a long cylindrical. Tony, you want to hand me that shot of fireball there? Thanks. Looks like a long cylindrical object that almost looked like a...
Why am I doing Jeff Bridges in like...
You sound like a Bloody Mary guy. Is that right?
Looks like a long cylindrical object that almost looked like a cruise missile type of thing. Moving really fast and went right over the top.
End quote. Give me that Bloody Mary.
So, well, all right. I mean, this is interesting that they're... I mean, so said, you know, 300,000 pilots in the last 60 years... and got fired for it, you know, lost their jobs over it. So this guy gets taken seriously. Okay, great. Why him? Why now? What's up?
It's on. As I said in the tweet when I retweeted Tom DeLonge's picture of the alien, it's on. Speaking of being on, our voicemail is on, Tony. How's that segue?
Hey guys, big fan. Love the show. Listen, there are movies that only present the negatives. Death, possession, never-ending soul destruction. Low-hanging fruit. Demons aren't always bad. Sometimes, you know, they can be, pretty. You know, beautiful, even. The Ninth Gate, for instance, by Roman Polanski. Fantastic filmmaker. Check it out. You know, let your viewers know. Okay, Wilhelm. Back to work. Okay, bye.
That came from Michael, Tony. This is exactly...
Spooky.
No, excuse me. This came from M. Just signed M on the voicemail form. This is exactly what I was hoping for. No, not an actual demon calling us. That makes me deeply uncomfortable. But...
That was... disturbing.
Our audience having fun and doing things just like that. That's phenomenal.
I'm emailing everybody and saying, mess with us. Come on. And they're like, we don't open our emails anymore. I'm like, why not? And they're like, how old are you? That's what's been happening.
I think it's of note too that whoever M is has more technical ability than I do, because I don't even know how to pitch my voice down like that to sound like a demon. So well done, M.
If that in fact is what was happening, that was very authentic sounding and quite disturbing.
Don't start.
And very funny. Wilhelm scream. That's a deep cut. You know what that is, right?
Deep pull. I do. That is the. Oh, hold on. Let's hit your sounder. And now it's time for Tony's cinema term of the day. Tell us about the Wilhelm scream, Tony. It's a famous sound effect, right? Used throughout movies.
Yeah, It is. It's a scream. It's a man scream that was recorded in the 30s. I don't know if it was recorded for the original King Kong or not, but it was that old. It's that old. It goes back that far. And it was, I think, kind of an in joke, because that scream was kept in the library of sound effects and screams. I'm going to guess if it was King Kong, it was RKO. But sound effects, people have been using that sound effect forever, since the 30s, and it shows up in movies today. If you listen really carefully, you can hear that man scream in 1,000 different films. It's in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Wow.
It's in a lot of movies you wouldn't expect, and some serious movies too, where they actually just kind of bury it in there.
It's so cool. So the same scream used since the 30s or whatever in all different types of movies of a man screaming. As a sound effect.
It's an Easter egg. It's basically like an Easter, like a little sound effects person's like Easter egg.
That's so cool. I love that stuff. And so M, thank you so much for that. Incredible. Please. We want to hear from you. Leave us messages. And not just voicemail messages, but we'd like to hear from you on our social media, which we did from a couple people. And I want to highlight this one, Tony, because just like that voicemail, This is a perfect example of how it is supposed to be done. Interacting with us, what we were hoping you would do. We posted a picture of your notes on tonight's film that we're about to get into on our social media pages. And Kerrig, I hope I'm saying that name correctly, Kerrig, wrote, I watched it exists, meaning exists. I watched it in two other Bigfoot movies last night. Can't wait for the episode to hear your thoughts. That's what we hope for. You get your homework assignment, you watch the movie, and you listen along. That's it.
There are rules and regulations. There's marching orders. There's things you have to do. This isn't just a podcast. It's like a job. Having a job.
Think of it as work, almost punishment.
Yeah.
It's punitive.
You know, something that you don't enjoy. We enjoy it. You know, you're part of this process, but
hey,
you need to do
the work. Watch this. We're going to watch and talk about it.
All right, should we dive into it? Oh, disclaimer. I want to say before we get into this movie, vis-a-vis UFOs, which was our paranormal breaking news today, and Bigfoot. I alluded to it earlier. There's a large part of the Bigfoot community that believes that UFOs are attached to this phenomenon. And I am one of them, however, with an asterisk. I'm not saying that it's directly tied to UFOs. I believe that there's a piece of the UFO phenomenon, I believe there's a piece of the Bigfoot phenomena that's paranormal, and it's get all jumbled up. And there's an area right here in Massachusetts where it happens, where there are multiple sightings of UFOs and Bigfoot and ghosts and light anomalies. All those things come together, and there's a bunch of them around the world. And there are things like Bigfoot tracks disappearing in the middle of fields after people see a Bigfoot and light anomalies. So one of the first times I ever spoke at a Bigfoot conference, my former partner said to me, you might not want to bring up the UFO thing because these guys are like the hardcore Bigfoot believers where it's like, this is an animal and we're going to track it and find it and prove it, right? And all that woo we don't like. First thing I do, I go up, I go, all right, how many believe that there's Bigfoot's a North American undiscovered ape? And all the hands go up. I go, how many people believe that it's some sort of paranormal thing? And maybe one hand went up and I got glares. But funny thing happened. After my speech, I had three or four people come up to me, you know, dressed in the camo and the, you know, badass outdoorsman, go like, hey, I didn't raise my hand, but the night I saw tracks, I saw a light through the forest, rise up a big bright. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so they're scared to say in public, but a lot of people that experience Bigfoot go through these things.
And listen, I know why people are scared to say in public, because people don't take this kind of thing lying down. They usually get ridiculed. And in a small community, or with this, you know, in a small town where everybody kind of knows each other and everybody's in enough business of each other's as it is, your instincts aren't going to be to like say, you know what I saw, because your credibility is definitely going to take a hit. Unfortunately, you know,
it's so true, Tony.
So like, I get it.
If I say Bigfoot, I believe in Bigfoot, that sounds wacky. If I say I believe Bigfoot was dropped off here by a UFO, that's a whole nother level of, you know,
it really is. It truly is. And I mean, I really do understand that. I think no matter how interested I get in this stuff, I'm always trying to keep, I don't know if I'm call, if I don't, I don't even what I want to call it. I just want to say, I want to keep one foot in a place of the normal person, the regularly informed person, the person who doesn't read books about this, or has never really thought about it. How does it look and feel and seem to them? I just think it's important to keep a mind on that. And, you know, but I'd be interested to see, like, if you went to a Bigfoot convention where they all believed they came from another planet, would they get upset if you started talking about tracking great apes in the North Woods? They'd get upset. They'd try to kill you. They'd freak out.
I don't know. I don't know that.
How dare you?
I don't know that that camp exists as much as the guys who think it's North American undiscovered ape get mad at that. I wore a sweatshirt on another one. I wore a sweatshirt. I should have worn it tonight. Of literally Bigfoot walking and a UFO above him beaming down onto the Bigfoot, which, you know,
oh, yeah, okay.
People just looked at me like,
I've seen that.
I want to fight you now. I also have a Bigfoot UFO socks.
Okay. Okay. Again, we can edit all of it. We can edit any of this stuff.
Oh, I haven't started recording yet.
You know, as far as Bigfoot stuff is concerned, here's kind of where I start and end. I was an enthusiast as a kid because of things like In Search Of, you know, that show. Like, that was, I was a big fan of that show, and anything that was on that show, I was into for at least 3 weeks. Like, I would get books on it and read about it, and then I'd kind of forget about it. At a certain point, you know, the connection between anything paranormal wasn't really being made back in the 70s,
right,
or early 80s. It wasn't, unless it wasn't being talked about in the media. So once I figured out, oh, it's just maybe a missing link, or maybe it's a monkey or something.
Right.
I kind of lost interest, not because I didn't care about the animals, but I'm like, leave it alone. If it's an animal, like, if it's particularly, if it's just an animal, then it probably doesn't want to be bothered.
Right.
And so leave it alone. But I never got in, like, it was until I started talking to you at lunches where you're like, no, there's something going on weird with these Bigfoot. I was like, really?
Yeah.
And then I did a little looking online and pretty quickly saw that you weren't, you know, this is kind of outlier stuff, but not that far out. Like, there's a lot of people who really believe strongly in it, that there's something going on. That's not just a big missing link, a big hairy ape.
Yeah. And another thing we know, Tony, and this ties perfectly accidentally into earlier part of this first half of the show, the FBI we mentioned on this UFO story. We knew recently through Freedom of Information Acts, I think it was a year and a half ago or so, maybe 2 years ago, it was proven that the FBI admitted that they had a file. They did an investigation of a Bigfoot sighting. So that was proof that at some level, at some time, the FBI, our government, actually did some research into a Bigfoot sighting. And I think there was physical evidence involved. They analyzed hair like Dr. Jeff Meldrum does. And so I just wanted to put that out there since we were talking FBI and we're talking Bigfoot.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
As far as exists goes, I would say this movie's philosophy falls strongly in the camp of it's not supernatural. It's not. There's nothing weird going on. It's just a big monkey, basically.
I think the filmmaker was trying to say that that Bigfoot is made of CGI effects.
Okay.
Let's go.
Enough.
Let's go.
Enough.
Let's go.
Enough teasing. What are we talking about? What is the movie?
You know, Tony and I love hearing from you.
Hello, Tony and Matty. This is Peter Stray here.
And it's so easy to leave us a voicemail.
I love your show so much.
All you got to do is go to our homepage, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal.
Hey, guys, I really like your podcast.
Simply click the message button.
I hope that's a suggestion you'll consider.
And just tell us what you think.
Love what you guys are doing.
I'm doing it right now. Isn't that meta? anchor.fm/ratedparanormal.
Chapstick.
A group of friends who venture into the remote East Texas woods for a party weekend find themselves stalked by Bigfoot. Brought to us by the man who brought us the Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez. Tony, a found footage masterpiece in the spirit of Blair Witch, or is it footage that should have stayed hidden?
Should have stayed hidden. Let's just call it a night. Let's
good night, everyone.
Should have stayed hidden. Not on the shelf. Good night. Thank you.
Wow. All right, you start.
This is what I wrote down. I wrote so many pages of notes because I saw the movie twice.
Sorry.
I took one set of notes. I transcribed those notes. I took another set. I melded those together. I thought about this. At the end of the day, I don't even know if I have anything of interest to say other than this.
Wow.
If Blair Witch Project thinks it's Alien, this movie thinks it's Aliens. So I get what Eduardo Sanchez is trying to do. He took the same stuff that the Blair Witch was made out of. It's another found footage, home shot, low budget film, shot in the woods completely with a group of people who were beset by a problem, and they get kind of picked off. Spoiler alert, guys, this is going to get, there's no, you're on your own. We're going to give everything away because there's nothing to give away. A lot of people die. And so this feels like it's, you know, trying to do the action adventure action version of Blair Witch in a lot of ways. So on paper, I could see Eduardo Sanchez trying to like do a follow up to Blair Witch, and not a bad idea, like good idea. Do we start with good news or bad news? How do you want to do that?
Let's do the good stuff, because there's way less of it, I venture to guess.
All right, we'll be cutting to a commercial in a second, obviously. All right. As far as I can tell, you know, I had a bad experience with this movie, but then I did some research on Eduardo Sanchez, and I really like Eduardo Sanchez. Like, he's a really likable guy. He seems like a really nice guy. He's not a Hollywood schmo, you know?
Right.
He made Blair Witch Project with his partner back when they were like 23 years old. 23 or 4 years old. They made Blair Witch for like 20 grand, you know. They had no idea that's what would happen. They didn't even dream that the Blair Witch Project would take off the way it did. So they didn't have a plan, right? Like a lot of young filmmakers, they just make a movie and they're going to see what happens, and all of a sudden this thing grosses like almost $300 million worldwide.
They won the lottery.
Just amazing. Now, they both liked movies and stuff, and they hadn't been fully formed as filmmakers. This was their first movie. And so in this hit, Eduardo Sanchez in this interview said, I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a script. I didn't have a plan. I wasn't a Hollywood player. I didn't know. So I took 6 years off and got married and did my life, because I made a lot of money and I could not like scramble. And I was like, wow, that's a really, you know, what a good guy. Like, what a nice thing.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't go to Hollywood and just, you know, do a lot of crazy meetings and just take whatever was there. Like, he figured stuff out. So, you know, then he was always loved Bigfoot. Like, Bigfoot's literally like a passion of his since he was a little kid. Like, authentically, he loves Bigfoot. Like, I think he loves it even more than you. A movie about Bigfoot. He did. He went and made a movie about it. Also, what I like about him is that, you know, he's a guy that, you know, even at that point probably could have, you know, made a far more grindhouse exploitive movie than he made. He could have made, you know, really like Bikini Babes with Bigfoot and like the whole thing. And he tried to not do that. And I want to give him props for trying not to do that, because I think this is a hard genre to do without being ridiculous, just being completely ridiculous. It's really hard. This is one of the only examples of one that's not like kind of a B jokey thing, you know, that takes on the subject matter. Okay. So those are all things I like. I mean, I think he did. I honestly think that the actual Bigfoot stuff in it isn't too bad. Like, it is CGI, but it's Weta did it. And at the time, this was 2014. So we're not looking at current effects either. I liked some of that stuff. I thought they actually sold the Bigfoot better than I thought they were going to. I'll say that.
What about when they went practical? And so there was some CGI Bigfoot, like when he's running through the woods and stuff, but then they get practical at other times. You definitely see the creature up close. Did that work for you too? Just effect wise.
I wasn't crazy about the design of the face when we finally actually see it.
Got it.
But I thought it was a well-made effect.
Yep.
It wasn't what I wanted to see, but I thought they did a good job in building it. It looked authentic enough. It was totally better than you think you're going to see in this movie,
yes.
I thought.
Yes.
You know, I mean, okay, I'll take a couple of other things and say, like, I like the fact that the first Bigfoot attack happens in the daytime. Like, that first guy who buys it, you're not expecting it to be like, nope, full daylight. He's trying to ride away from this thing. And that wasn't terrible. You know, that had some juice.
Yeah.
Sound design, not terrible. Also was pretty good in Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. Underground tunnel system for the Bigfoots. Put that in. That was good.
Really cool
That's
scene.
That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got. What did you, what was good for you? Give me the good news.
The forest was awesome. Like where they picked was very spooky and very squatchy.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The cabin was great. The set design of the cabin was very eerie at the beginning.
Yeah.
I watched it for free on Amazon, and every like 20 minutes there was a Limu Emu commercial that interrupted the movie. I thought those were great.
Mm-hmm. He did a good job with those, Sanchez. I want you to know it's also available for free on YouTube, which is where I caught it the second time.
Were there commercials to help you in between? See, weren't those like welcome moments of relief?
Everybody needs a smoke break, man. Come on.
No,
everybody needs a smoke break. That's what commercials are for.
We've hit the crux of why this is so hard for us when we stumble upon something like this, because this isn't one of those movies that I'm angry with, like, You know when you get a bad feeling about some movies we've seen where the, like, you know, some movies that dealt with some stuff they shouldn't have been, like
Emily Rose. I was angry. I was really angry.
And the American Haunting with some of the subject material they brought for no reason, like, and the depiction of slavery, things like that. There's nothing in this like that. And what you say about Eduardo Sanchez, it's so hard because I don't want to like hammer him.
I don't either.
Given that.
I, the last thing I want to do.
Right.
Because I also think that he's responsible, you know, he and he's half responsible anyway for one of the great horror movies. Like
he wrote Stairway to Heaven. You know what I mean? In a way, like, you know, he's one half of the guys who wrote Stairway to Heaven. Blair Witch is phenomenal. And I want to ask you this, Tony, as someone who's watched the movie twice now, why does this is impossible to ask, but if anyone can make it a sentence, it's you. Why does Blair Witch work so incredibly well? And why does this not?
Honestly, it's something about how it was made. And I it's hard to answer that question actually without knowing a little bit more about how they made it. I know Blair Witch was not scripted. It was rehearsed. Some of it was rehearsed, and then the actors were thrown into the woods and kind of made to go through this experience. They were kind of tortured. I mean, it was rough. These actors went through hell on Blair Witch, but it was their improvs and their words. I feel like this was not really scripted, but I feel like Sanchez was there with the actors. I think they were doing scenes more like you do in a regular movie. I don't think they just like in Blair Witch, the actors shot the movie. And then at night, Sanchez would get together with them and go over the footage and set up the next day. And then Sanchez and his partner would leave, and then the movie would get shot. But I think Sanchez was on set here, I would imagine, and he didn't know how to work with actors. I mean, straight up, I think this is 2014. He's gone on to direct a lot of stuff. He's done a lot of TV. When he made Exists, he'd made Blair Witch and a couple of shorts and then this. Like, he hadn't really done much.
Mm.
And he was also working solo, so very hard to do. And he didn't have a script. Or characters, like the first, like, you know, that's it. Really, Blair Witch had characters that had backstories, that had identities, and this has none of that.
This has been a huge education for me in what works for me in film and what doesn't. And I couldn't have articulated it before doing this podcast really as well as I can now, because here's another example of it's got everything that Blair Witch has in a lot of ways. And then it's got nothing that Blair Witch has. It's got the one thing. Yeah. It's the one thing missing that makes Blair Witch special is the time you spend with the characters at the beginning, and the fact that we're so horrified and terrified for them. We don't want them to go through this. We don't want them to die. In this movie, I was so fundamentally rooting for the Bigfoot to tear them all.
Wanted them all to die the minute I met them. The minute they show up.
To tear them limb from limb.
Yeah.
They are angering. They all hate each other for no reason. They're bitching.
No reason.
They're kvetching at each other. They're angry with each other. I'm like, why are these people on a vacation together? Like, there's a quick montage at the beginning where you think it's all friendship and love, right? And then the first scene you see, they're like lighting the guy's beard on fire, whatever, prank, whatever. He wakes up and he's kind of amused by it. He sees it on video and goes, hey, you're trying to light my beard on fire. She goes, shut up, Tim. Or whatever his name is, you know, I'm like, what? What's going on? What? Why do they hate each other?
truly. I have written down, I want them all to die so bad.
Yes.
And they do, pretty much, not soon enough. Usually I'm... Now, here's the thing. This is why I get upset. And this is what hurt. This is why I get upset with Eduardo, because he's better than this. You're better than this, Eduardo. But this is old. You're better
and,
now.
And he has become
great
better.
Stuff
right.
now, I'm sure.
Right. Yes, he wouldn't do this
but
now.
The thing is, like, you know, these actors... I don't, not only do I not think that these characters know each other, I don't think the actors met even in like, I think it was like at the craft service table and they're like, oh, you guys are playing brothers. Oh, what's up, man? Like that was the amount of work that they did. And what a strange idea ultimately to take a Bigfoot movie that's like, in this case, since you're not doing it supernaturally, you're just doing it. It's just basically like a bear attack movie that just goes
right.
on for
yes.
too long.
Yes.
And so there's nothing that happens except they're scared and they're hiding and it's scared. And
yes,
there's no.
And
so he takes the time to develop characters that aren't there. It's like, why are you spending time for a half an hour getting to know them when they're not telling us anything about themselves? You know, improv is like yes and. This was just like no but, like the whole time.
That I'm so glad you just said that, because one of the things I wrote down was they keep telling each other to shut up, which is bad improv, right? So it's like there's
bad.
Actually a scene where one of the actors keeps saying, it's not no animal, man, you know, I don't know what it is, but it ain't an animal. And then one of the kids goes, I think it's a Sasquatch. He goes, will you shut up about Sasquatch? Like, you just said.
I think I sent you that recording.
Yes. Yes. Let's play it.
What is that?
There's something out there.
There ain't no fucking animal, man. What the fuck is it?
I know what it is.
Shut up.
Guys, we're safe in the cabin.
We have to stay calm, okay?
We're gonna be fine, as long as we don't provoke it, okay? There's no credible documented cases of a Sasquatch attack.
Shut up about a Sasquatch.
I'm serious.
Shut up!
It's like, you just said you don't think it's a normal animal. Your friend offers up a suggestion, and you're telling him to shut up for it. Like,
shut up.
What's happening?
There are things that have, like, from a script perspective, I'm just like, I couldn't stand it. I couldn't take it anymore. There's no script. They're just bad improvs. These poor actors... It's just the most sloppy and careless. I find it so funny that people without any real ability to write real dramatic scripts with real people in them or act, you know, convincingly, always pick these heightened emotional films where it's life and death and incredibly intense acting is required. Like, it's, you instantly are in over your head. Here you've got four actors that are just treading water, and it's pretty rough. I will say, not to be mean, this is early work for all of them. But a little shout out to the actress who plays Dora in the movie. Her name is Dora Madison in real life. The only person who's named the character in the movie, but she's trying to do good work, and I think she's gone on to do good work. I saw her in a movie called Bliss, I want to say, that is pretty cool, and she's really good in. So again, this is like a B movie that people made in the woods, and they didn't have a lot of money, despite it being a Blair Witch guy. But dude, screenplay, please.
She has a great breakdown performance. I think that's a very strong acting performance. I think the acting across the board is okay. It's fine. It's fine. It's just that they are nothing. They're not only are you not rooting for them, you're actively rooting against them. Which is a choice that Eduardo Sanchez could have made. He could have put a bunch of bad people in a cabin and had Sasquatch kill them, which would be a different movie, which I'd be all for. But that wasn't his intent. Clearly, his intent was like...
Well, I don't know. It's not. One of the weird things I did was to kind of like try to triangulate a devil's advocate version of this review.
Right.
It's so alarmingly thin. This film has got nothing. Nothing happens in this movie. Like, nothing happens. The script just goes, it goes from thing happening to thing happening to thing happening. It doesn't have any nuance.
It's worse. It goes from thing happening to thing happening, and then some of the things that happen contradict the things that were said earlier.
Right. Kids hit a Bigfoot in their car. They hang out at a cabin. They have no phone reception. They drink and ride bikes. the stoner kid knows Bigfoot's there, and they say that it isn't there.
They keep telling
Bigfoot
him, shut
destroys
up.
The car. Brothers admit they stole the key from the uncle. Nobody knows where they are. They separate. Bigfoot, it's just like a thing after thing after thing. It just plods. Like, and there's no reason that these people are together. There's no connective tissue. There's no history. There's no plot devices. There's nothing else happening except we're getting chased by Bigfoot. I don't understand.
Those two people, you mentioned something that drove me insane. One, I can name you like four of these things, but they hit something and they're looking at the footage and they're going, it doesn't look like that. It doesn't look like that. It looks.
I'm looking at Bigfoot.
Right. It clearly looks like, you know, either a bear or Bigfoot. And they're going like, it could be this. And, but then subsequently, every time someone mentions Sasquatch, everyone tells everyone to shut up. It's not Sasquatch. But beyond that, one of the lead characters admits, this Brian guy who I keep referencing, this Brian guy admits and says, my uncle told us he saw something here. He told us basically he saw a Sasquatch and we knew that. And yet him and his brother go through this whole thing going like, what was that? What could that be? Could it be a bear? Could it be? It was like, you just told us that you knew the whole time that your uncle never came there because he saw something. So which is it?
You know, I don't want to complain too much about the uncle because it is that uncle subplot is my favorite subplot of the movie. Yeah. It's deeply funny. And the payoff is amazing because the uncle finally shows up. We get him at the end because they finally get cell phone reception to get him a message and he comes out to help. And, you know, for those of you who are listening and need some backstory here, they went to the cabin and they didn't tell the uncle. This is his cabin. They just went. And he had told them never to go. And so finally the uncle shows up and has an interchange, which I'd also like you to play because it's too good to miss.
Here it is. This is, I believe, Brian, that character chasing after uncle.
Yes.
Uncle Bob!
Brian!
Uncle Bob! Help!
Oh, help, man.
Oh, my God. Come on. Brian. What you boys do?
Let you take them all.
Come on. Come on. We gotta
go. No, we can't leave them.
Come on, Brian.
I don't want to leave.
Let's get to the truck.
Okay. We didn't listen to you, Uncle Bob. It's my fault. It's all my fault.
Shut up. We'll deal with it when we get to the truck.
I'm sorry. And then the uncle finally, I mean, he has the best line where he's just basically like, shut up, get in the car.
I'm doing
like
you in the truck.
He doesn't even want to hear about it. Oh my God. It's so funny.
I like his what I assume to be an homage to Land of the Lost, with the dead baby Sasquatch in its nest. Oh, yeah. What was the creature on Land of the Lost? That little guy, Poco or something? Yeah. Coco?
Shaka.
What was it?
Shaka.
Shaka. It was Shaka Khan.
Yeah.
Shaka Khan.
The character's name was Shaka on yes. Land of the Lost. I was there every Saturday morning.
Yes. And didn't that little baby Sasquatch look like Shaka?
Totally looked like Shaka. And I was missing a Slee Stacks. See if he had brought the Slee Stacks in. The Slee Stacks would have been a perfect addition.
Oh, God.
So here's my devil's advocate. Here's my devil's advocate viewing. This is the film nerd that you really want to just shove away from you violently.
No, because I want to love this.
Well, here's an interpretation that I don't buy, but this is what's weird. Like, okay, here's what's interesting. Final Girl is actually a white dude. So Final Girl. Final Girl. It's a horror movie trope which started pretty much with Halloween. Jamie Lee Curtis is the girl that survives the slasher movie.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of the character in this movie. I thought you meant like the last girl to survive. Gotcha.
Oh no, right. Like he's this guy, this white stoner guy, is the final girl of this movie, which is an interesting flip. But it's also, you could say it's a comment because, you know, he's actually the cause of this trouble. He and his brother are the cause of the problem, but he claims victim status, like won't take responsibility really for it. You know, all these people, the men primarily, are behaving like animals, much more so than Bigfoot, who is actually trying to take revenge on the murder of the killing of its offspring.
Shaka.
Giving it, like, you know, so you could say that the Bigfoot here is actually like living in harmony with nature, and these buffoons come in to its habitat and ride bikes around and be idiots. And that the Bigfoot represents family values and like native rights and things that like that. And these men are like babies who talk big, but they can't do anything but like shoot paintballs. And so real outdoor stuff is beyond them, but they all talk a good game. So there is kind of maybe a commentary on masculinity and, you know, gender roles in horror, or, you know, what we're doing to the, you know, the natural lands, the world around us. So somewhere in there, you could say that it's got these themes, but I feel like that they're not really explored. They're just kind of there. And
for that to have any impact at all, because I do believe he was going for some of that, for that to have any impact at all, you shouldn't be 100% rooting for the Sasquatch at every single point. It should be a little more balanced, so that there's a right. So that has some impact of like, hey, we're, and I wrote down Hatfield and McCoys in my notes right there. Because I realized, I think he wanted to say something about forgiveness too, and letting go, because at the end, spoiler alert, the lead boy who's the last to survive turns his back to the Sasquatch, says, "You're going to kill me anyway. Go ahead and kill me." Sasquatch goes and thinks about it and walks away. You know, and I wrote Hatfield McCoys, how long are we going to play this war? All your friends are dead. My baby's dead. Let's forgive each other and move on. And I thought that was nice. However, I was hoping the Sasquatch was going to rip his head off, so it loses some impact, because you just got to give me something.
Well, I saw the movie.
You got to give me something from them that I root for, right? Just a little.
The minute they hit the baby Sasquatch in the beginning, I'm like, oh, they're going to do Gorgo here. They're Gorgoing this. Gotcha. Gorgo is, of course, the big lizard monster in that British monster movie that is just trying to get its baby back. And so whenever they do that, with, you're like, okay, you're going to play these chords, these kind of sentimental chords about it, and it gives the monster depth and all this stuff without really doing anything. Now, the only problem with any of it is that they didn't write the script. So all those ideas are just kind of floating around there, but the actors aren't really portraying characters. And so the ideas, you can have all the ideas you want, but you actually got to make the movie. You also have to make the movie.
Yes, with these, so that those ideas have some impact.
Yeah.
The one scene of the girl, you know, lamenting the fact that we might have hurt his child there as a mother, or as a whatever it would be. But it's like just the girl's going like, "His cabin is gross. You're a jerk. I hate you. Shut up." Like, oh,
right. They're all just awful. But I have no security in the sense that they're awful because they're trying to portray awful people, or are these just bad improvs with actors that are lost that don't know how to do anything but just be hostile with each other?
Bingo. And that's why I say
thing to do in an improv.
100%. And that's why I say, if he wanted to make a movie about bad people and ramifications of nature and all that, I'm all for that. And I would have loved that movie. And I would have loved rooting for Sasquatch in that case. It would have been fun and interesting and dark, but it wasn't that. It was just, you're rooting for Bigfoot because there's nothing else.
There's just these tropes, these people just, that don't really exist outside of movies.
Right.
They're not real people.
Right.
They don't know each other. There's no reason why this group would go into the woods together. That just doesn't, none of it makes logical sense from an emotional point of view, from like a psychological point of view. And
no,
okay,
Tony,
yes,
you don't like, okay, to, you don't like doing camping trips with people you can't stand for 4 days? Like, did you want to snipe that?
You hardly know ever. So it's just it's too bad, because, like, you know, I know that the heart was probably in the right place, but I'd probably be a little more lenient if you hadn't already made the Blair Witch Project.
That's right.
That's the thing. I keep coming back to it, and I'm like, ultimately, your first film is so much better than your second. Like, literally, conceptually better, better acting, better script, better storytelling, more mystery.
Oh,
just all of it. And this, the second outing is unrecognizable from that movie, like unrecognizable. It's very strange.
There's a short list of films I've ever been as scared by than Blair Witch. And there's a short list of films that I've ever been less scared of than this one. It's two polar opposites. And
totally
granted, dealing with the Bigfoot subject is harder because With Blair Witch, you don't know what you're dealing with. So the mythology is a mystery, right, which makes it scary inherently. Bigfoot, right, we all have our preconceived notions and all that, so it's harder, but boy, yeah, right, it's
That's why like Blair Witch is like Alien and this is like Aliens. It's like, no, this is just an action movie. Yeah. This is a movie about,
yeah,
this could be about, you know, a bear attack. It could be about people lost in an avalanche and just how a survival movie, you, yeah, know? I mean, it's, and there are points, like, even though there are some things that they sell Bigfoot wise, there's, yep, just, there's that point where you're just like, it's just a guy going rawr, and shaking a fake refrigerator to look like the place is coming apart, you know, and just like, how much, this isn't, we're just not selling this. At a certain point, it's just, it always ends up just a guy in a rubber suit, like at a certain point.
Yes.
And look, if you actively want to see them die, you know, you've made a certain kind of horror movie, but not maybe the one you anticipated making.
I'd love to see him take another crack at it. I really would.
Yeah. Because with what he's learned about directing actors and, yes, working with, yes, actors over the last,
yes,
you know, 10, yes, 10 years. So, yeah.
And there was probably, yeah, he was probably forced into a lot of this stuff too after the success of Blair Witch. Like, make this now, make the, you know, record labels and what they want there. If a record.
But
if
no,
a,
but if, that's the thing. He can't hide behind that.
Because he took the time off.
Because he took the time off, yeah, and he just went low budget and he raised a little money and he kind of, he wrote this. This, he's got to own it. I mean, he's got to own this one. Sorry,
well, we said the good part. what I remember from being a kid, besides In Search Of, which we've talked about before, how that both affected us seeing Patty in that opening of In Search Of, was I definitely have a very strong memory of Andre the Giant playing Bigfoot on the $6 Million Man. And then, as a matter of fact,
oh, yeah,
I had a tube in my house, in my basement, like where I played. It was a construction tube. It was somehow left in the neighborhood when they're building the houses and stuff. And I rolled it with a friend into our basement. And at the time, you know, I was 5 or 6, 7, and I could fit in the tube, you know, up to my head. And my friend would play Bigfoot on one end of the tube, and I would play Steve Austin. Because remember, they're in like this like tube of some kind with like lasers. Yeah, and
they're in a drainage, like a drainage.
Yes, and so we would, yeah, play that. I remember, and I would get so scared playing it, I couldn't even play it. I'm like, stop being Sasquatch.
That's great.
So
that is great. I remember that Bigfoot. Yeah. I remember him well.
Scary. Andre looks scary as Bigfoot. I can still see his face.
Another shout out before we close. Yeah. Let's talk about Brian Steele for a second.
Yes.
Brian Steele. They spent the money on this movie on the suit and some of the digital effects, and on Brian Steele, who plays Bigfoot in this movie. He's in the suit. And he does a great job for again, for a B movie that you're just like, what is this? So, you know, People at a Cabin movie. Not expecting to see this guy. Check a look at these credits. He played Bigfoot in Harry and the Hendersons TV show. He played Kothoga in The Relic. He played the bear in The Bear, Jumbo the Elephant God in Monkey Bone, Shark Mouth in Men in Black 2, a werewolf performer in Underworld, a Hell Knight in Doom, and Berserker Predator in Predators. He works all the time, and he's like one of the famous guys who gets in suits, and is 6'7". He's huge and moves really well as an athlete, and he sells it. And so good job, Brian Steele.
The scene with him and Brian on the bridge is actually good acting for the Bigfoot. And then I agree with you. I'm glad you mentioned it. Definitely one of the highlights of this film is the tunnel underground lair that they built for the Bigfoot. That was very suspenseful.
That was good.
It was really well done. It was very practical and it worked. It was very cool.
It's part of the lore.
Yep.
It's the part of the Bigfoot lore that you don't see in movies. Like, you've heard about
but
no one's really put that in a film before.
Nesting.
And it's kind of like how an alligator would pull you into its, you know, cavern or something. It's creepy. And I thought that was a nice touch. So
yes,
good on them for that.
He showed the tree bends and the nesting and everything that we've come to learn about Bigfoot. So yeah, there was some good, it gets a stronger paranormal score on that sense than it does a film score, because it did try to throw some Bigfoot stuff in there.
That's what's odd about this one, because I can't put this on the shelf just for is for the acting. I just got to be like, sorry.
Yeah. It's just not strong.
But it actually seems to be fairly well researched in terms of what encounters could be like. And certainly the knocking, the sounds that they hear.
Yep.
It feels like they could be in the same world, because Blair Witch, if you remember, has a lot of sounds in the woods at night, like knocking and vocalizations and stuff that's attached to the Bigfoot mythology also, right?
Yes. That was one of my disappointments in the movie. At the very end, you hear the long missing friend calling out for them in pain, and they start chasing him. Very reminiscent of them trying to find their friend in Blair Witch, who you learn it's not him. It's deceased him, or the demon him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought for a minute that's where we're going. I thought he was going to add some sort of paranormal aspect to the Bigfoot story. Maybe the Bigfoot can mock our voices and it's a demon in the woods or something. I'm like, ooh, this could be scary. And no, it's just he was still alive with a broken leg.
Similar trajectory. Yeah. I mean, they go into the basement of that house. And in this, they go into the basement of the lair, like the underground tree lair.
Right.
Which must have been a set. So, you know, they did spend some interesting... They spent some money on that set. That's a pretty big set they had to have built.
Right.
And that was actually pretty authentic feeling. They did a great job with it. So, like, how it looks, I can't fault it for the photography. I mean, they did a decent job for that. So, you know, but just got to get some actors and some scripts that you want to watch them not die.
Take one more
That's
month.
All I'm asking.
One more month. Call in a Tony Arkin and go over the script one more time. And you'll be fine.
Get Aaron Sorkin on the phone. Just write some dialogue.
You make Bigfoot go into a meeting delivering quick patter dialogue as he's on his way to his about funding a government program. And I think we need to know whether it's on the shelf or not. I don't think we even need to say it necessarily, but we're going to pass on this one. P for pass. Valid attempt. This is a chock full one. This is what happens when we're separated for 2 weeks. Next week, what is our film going to be?
Friend of the show, Liz, I believe, recommended The Believers.
The Believers with Charlie Sheen?
A spooky movie. Yes. Linda Shaver, I believe, and others. Richard Mazur, I believe, is in this movie. Yeah, I'm excited. It's a good choice.
So The Believers... it's available. You can find it, watch it, and we'll be back next week and we will discuss. Anthony, thanks. Thanks. Any final thoughts?
Like, what?
Shut up. Shut up, Anthony. Shut up about Sasquatch. I just thought I'd be like the people in the movie were.
Oh, it's like 12-year-olds.
You're the best. See you next week.
All right, man.
Shut up about a Sasquatch. Dude. Shut up.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Fireball there.